Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time. Turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Hey, y'all, it's Chip Patterson from the Cover 3 Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. College football is about to enter its first ever 12-team playoff era, so join me, along with Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott, as we drop new episodes 5 times a week to close out the year. We've got reactions, bracket breakdowns, and best bets for these matchups with championship stakes. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, we're done.
Wake up! Wake up!
Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
So obviously, it's an interesting time of year. We're pretty much all Bears, and my God, it's just been awful. I guess we never talked about the idea. We didn't even mention that they have been eliminated from the playoffs.
Playoffs? Don't talk about it. Playoffs? You kidding me? Playoffs? I just hope we can win a game.
Not that anybody was still living that dream or having that hope, but I feel like we should have played taps or something.
Here we are. Yeah. They're going to be lucky to get 5 wins.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
Ooh-wee.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score's Glorious Wednesday. Ruthie Polinsky back for more. Not many people like to return, so thank you so much,
I'm
Ruthie.
Glad you're not sick of me yet.
Not at all.
Okay, good.
And we should, I mean, we announced later in the program that the Bears are not eliminated. Apparently, where there is life, there is hope, and there are some scenarios. I think it would take, like,
Mully.
A world disaster. But the Bears are technically not eliminated yet, but they will be maybe on Sunday. They probably don't even need a result on Monday. But I would agree with you when you say Mully. That's absolutely correct. No, that is right. That was a sternly voiced, you idiot. And I accept it because we know they're eliminated. But technically, Big Z tweeted out yesterday, just because he likes to correct us, that they are technically not eliminated.
I hope that that was the last in the hunt graphic that we see.
That's it.
Because I'm done.
No, they're done. They're done. And they're done. Yeah.
And after the New England game, that was done,
yes,
done.
I agree.
Done, done.
That's when Dustin declared they'd never win another game. And I really blame you, Dustin, for that. Because they were really ready to turn it around.
I think Dustin deserves a prize for that take. Because I think you took a lot of
first one in a long time.
Yeah. You may have been right on that one. Yeah. I there's still 4 weeks left, buddy. I wouldn't be counting your chickens. They're still incubating.
Hey, this week, the road game's on Monday. It's not on Sunday. Yes. So maybe there's a chance. They had lost 20 consecutive Sunday road games.
That's correct.
Okay, so this is not, it's a Monday night game, in case you're not aware. The Bears aren't, Bears, everything's a big shakeup this week. So usually Tuesday's a day off. They did a little walkthrough yesterday. Guys were available via Zoom. Now today's the day off, and Brad told us that we won't get that first injury report until tomorrow.
That's right.
Yep. There you go.
If they somehow pull off this win on the road on a Monday night, I mean, that would be classic to not break, you know.
Here's the thing. Like, and I'm just going to say this because it's a strange thing to say, but I'll say it anyway. This is not an unfamiliar opponent. This is a team you played recently. This is a team you play twice a year. Mm-hmm. You should have enough knowledge of the opponent to be able to react as a coach, even if you're not the main guy, even if you're not that great a coach. You're familiar with the opponent. There's bad blood with anybody you have to play twice a year. You know your division. As much as we talk about how lopsided the nature of this thing was, when you really go back and think about the beginning of the year, how many people were on the Vikings? The Vikings had lost Kirk Cousins. They had brought in a quarterback in J.J. McCarthy. I don't think anybody thought that Sam Darnold was going to play well enough that Sam Darnold is now, no question, a starting quarterback in the NFL. And he will start next year in the NFL, even if we don't know where, because it would appear that J.J. McCarthy will be back. And by the way, Daniel Jones is there. Not that he's staying. I'm just saying there are other possibilities. And I love J.J. McCarthy. I love the story. Local guy made good. But the fact is, he's had two knee surgeries, not just one. They had to do a little cleanup operation. So we don't know. We don't know how that's going to work. But I would imagine that Darnold, on a one-year, $10 million deal, is going to go somewhere in free agency.
I think the comp has been sort of like a Baker Mayfield resurgence. Someone is going to want him to be their starting quarterback. And the Vikings, I think it's a tough spot for them. Because what is this trajectory for J.J. McCarthy, who... you know, is probably practicing in a limited capacity. Do you want to keep Sam Darnold around? I mean, and does Sam want to stay there
right
with Kevin O'Connell, who's going to be credited with this resurgence? Yep. So
QB whisperer.
It's going to be fascinating. I think the Daniel Jones situation is also really intriguing. Can Kevin O'Connell, you know, if J.J. McCarthy can't start next season, at the beginning of the year, can Kevin O'Connell kind of help the Daniel Jones resurgence? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is just, it's a really interesting, because if he's just going to churn out these, you know, washed up veteran quarterbacks and make them great again, I mean, Kevin O'Connell deserves all the praise.
And you know, he deserves all the praise for having Brian Flores there too, because there's a guy that, you think about it, like Danielle Hunter left in the offseason, and that looked like, oh, well, their pass rush just walked off, just went out the door. And they brought in veteran guys, and they've done a great job. And that guy really is a good defensive mind. I think that he's a very interesting guy, too, as a potential candidate. Although, as I said yesterday, I can't get my mind to buy the idea that the McCaskies are going to look at Roger and just kind of put a thumb to their nose and wave their fingers at them. Well, I think they follow whatever the league plan is just out of habit.
It's not even Roger. It's the other owners.
Yeah, well, that's
right.
Yeah,
and that's the, like, the McCaskies to say, yes, we don't care that Brian Flores is suing all of us.
Yes.
I think that would be shocking. The one thing that would be interesting would be to see if he drops the lawsuit.
Doesn't he have two? I think he has two.
He's
suing Houston,
a few teams, and then he's also suing just the league in general.
Yes.
So, listen, I'll say this on Brian Flores, and I've talked about him at length because I covered him for his last two seasons in Miami, back-to-back winning seasons for the first time in 20 years for the Dolphins. That, you want to talk about a football coach?
Oh, yeah.
And holding people, quote, the word that it's triggering for me right now to say the word accountable, but like, ugh. Brian Flores, that is a no BS. This guy is coming in. He means business. And if you're messing around, Nate Davis, if you're messing around, I know he's not here. I'm just saying.
Right.
For example, if you're messing around, Nate Davis, if you're not practicing hard, if you're messing around at the Hail Mary Tyreek Stevenson, that's someone that's not only going to make sure that you learn from that experience, but he's going to make you better from it.
Yeah.
And I think that's something, obviously, I know everyone wants to talk about what happened with Tua. And that
especially
Tua, and Tua, move on, babes.
Yeah.
Like, It's all good.
He seriously doesn't like Brian Flores, and he's muddying the waters.
And you know what? A lot of people don't like playing for Brian Flores. Yeah. A lot of people don't like working for Brian Flores. It takes a very special sort of tough-minded person who wants to grind and wants to work hard, but also wants to win really badly. And when Kevin Warren, Molly, was sitting there and listing off the character traits of what they want in a head coach in that press conference, I'm just sitting there like, check.
That's the guy that I described.
I personally loved covering Brian Flores. I got to know him a little bit outside of work. Tua called him a terrible person or a whore on the Dan Le Batard show.
Yep.
He is not a terrible person. I can promise you right now, he's not. And talking to people who are covering him in Minnesota, they love him. He's not a bad person. He's a wonderful man, and he's a really, really good football coach. I think that would be a really interesting person to bring in here and find out, what did you learn from that experience in Miami? What did you learn from Mike Tomlin, a year under Mike Tomlin? What have you learned from Kevin O'Connell? How are you going to organize your offensive staff to get the best out of the quarterback? I think, listen, I'm not going to... I will stand on the rooftops. Brian Flores, come to Chicago, baby. I would love it. I would love it.
Yeah. I'm glad you said that, frankly, because I think he's a really good football coach. And I think that, and we'll get into this, I think we'll talk about it in the pick six. I think the culture problem with the Chicago Bears, mm-hmm. they brag about their culture and they have for years. That guy is a culture builder. That guy knows how to organize, discipline a football team.
Mm-hmm.
So these pre-snap penalties and all these things, that would be long gone when you had someone like that. And Vrabel's kind of the same way. But those are the only like veteran coaches out there that you really would think about. And I think they really need to think about it. And I got a hard time imagining, you know, the Bears being able to go out and pull the trigger on that, given some of the personal history stuff against the league. And actually, when you really think about it, that Tua stuff doesn't help either, because what you need from a coach is you need somebody to work with a quarterback. And, you know, it's a problem that he would have to explain. And, you know, whenever you talk about defensive coaches, what's the first question? Who's your offense coordinator?
100%.
Who are you bringing with you? Who is it that you're going to put this on, and how are you going to handle this? And are you going to have a good relationship with our quarterback?
100%.
You'd have to get comfortable. You'd have to get past all that stuff in order to hire him.
Can I share a personal experience?
Please.
After the Minnesota game that was here, I had a chance to say hi to Brian Flores, obviously covered him, got to know him in Miami. I had a chance to say hi to him. We were chatting after the game, and the Vikings players were walking to the bus.
Yeah.
And Sam Darnold walking by. Brian Flores walks away from the conversation I was having with him. He goes, one sec. Walks over to Sam Darnold, gives him a huge hug. He came back. They chat for a second, came back over to me, and he goes, I always tell Sam, I'm always going to get you the ball back.
Oh, that's beautiful.
I'm always going to get you the ball back. I'm always going to give you another shot.
Yeah, that's good.
And you know what? To me, it was cool to kind of witness that personal experience.
Good.
Because after... you know, the one-sided story that we've gotten from Miami, right? Like, let's remember mm-hmm. that's a one-sided story that we've gotten, because Brian Flores is never going to throw Tua under the bus.
No.
But he probably could.
Yeah, but he hasn't talked about it at all.
And he won't.
Yeah, he's taking the high road.
Yeah. And, you know, you see the way that his players, when he was defending that situation, his players are standing on both sides of him, you know, sort of backing him. And listen, you can call me Ruthie Brian Flores Polinsky. Okay.
Wow, look at you.
I'm just a big fan of that guy.
Yeah. I mean, listen, we talked about it before the Detroit game, that really, in a weird way, that was a job interview for Ben Johnson. I think that's the way you have to look at coaches that you're facing the rest of the way, because it's really not about this season anymore for the Bears. It's about the future, which is why preserve the quarterback, please, and let's make sure there is a future. But I think that, you know, an astute fan will keep an eye on their defense and see what they're doing and see what that matchup is like, because there's another guy that is out there that is different because he has experience. You know, you mm-hmm. need people to have been through something before. Yeah. We have seen the long line of assistants that have been hired here and how that tends to go. So it would be, you know, they did it with John Fox, but Foxy by that time was on the back end. And,
you love the Foxy, the Flucy.
The Flucy I didn't create. I don't think Foxy was
mine. David did Flucy?
No, whoever did Flucy. Flucy was Flucy when he got here. That's I do enjoy a good nickname if it's solid. You know, I mean, I had a buddy and his family. He was like dark Irish, and his family had a brother, an older brother, who was blonde, and the rest of them were all dark haired. They called him the Swede, and every time I heard that reference, I would laugh because he wasn't actually Swedish, but he looked more Swedish than the rest of them. I love like an appropriate nickname. Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with
you and Flucy both love a nickname.
Yeah, Flucy was a little too. You know, I hope I'm not being disrespectful to him.
No,
by calling him Flucy.
I
found it kind of charming.
I think Flucy encapsulates who he is as a man, and it's a wonderful person that you want to like bring into your home and like have a nickname for him. Like that's. He's a nice man.
It was implied to me that it's disrespectful to not call a guy Coach or Coach Eberflus or whatever. And it was implied that when the players refer to him that way, it showed a lack of respect. So I was in a way encouraging that. I don't know if that's accurate or not, but
yeah, I know, for example, in other places, like I think the coaches like to be sort of, maybe in this day and age, maybe that's more of an old school, but like Flo loved to be called Flo or Coach Flo.
Is that right?
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Could Coach you imagine Flo. If we went from Floose to Flo?
No, I don't think I could handle that.
That's a lot.
That would be a lot.
We'd got to make sure we get our notes ready.
Just taking a step aside from football for a second, the baseball meetings are kind of blowing up. Did you see the Yankees? The Yankees are like a sailor on shore leave. It's like they've got a check and they got some money to spend, and woohoo! They signed Max Fried to the richest ever contract for a left-handed pitcher. The first ever guaranteed contract, right? Did I read that? The highest guarantee ever for a left-handed pitcher? Why am I struggling with that word all of a sudden?
Feels like a panic move.
It feels like they were in spending mode and they just decided, hey, you know, we didn't get this guy. Ah, you take a couple hundred million. We still got $500 million if we don't. It was just weird. They gave him what, 288 or something? What did they give him, Dustin?
218.
218. He's not worth that. You know, I've followed him pretty much his career because he was high school teammate with Lucas Giolito. Remember those days? Do you remember Lucas Giolito?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, long gone. But it's pretty interesting to see him make that kind of dough.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that he's worth it. And they already have a guy that they're paying a ton of money to. But that's the fourth richest contract ever given to a pitcher. Isn't that strange?
It's just getting so buried. Like, it's sort of just kind of flying under the radar because it's just like, here you go. Like, we got to do something to make people happy.
It just feels like it just feels like that's exactly what happened. Like, they were on a spending spree and they just threw in, give me the purse. Okay, I'll take the coat too with it.
Like, did not get a suite, though.
No, they didn't give a suite away. They got no Soto. But all those MLB contracts are guaranteed. But it's the most money ever given to a left-handed pitcher. I don't know. I would wonder if Garrett Crochet is worth more this morning. If indeed you are selling a pitcher, trading a pitcher, you should get a lot for him. Find out. There's a lot of rumors floating around him. A lot of names floating around about who could be involved in different deals. It's hard to make a pick of it. And, you know, frankly, I think the Sox are going to need more. Mm-hmm. That would be my mode. More, more, more.
You're saying that the Max Fried contract makes Crochet's value, his net value, go up.
I think it makes pitchers' value go up. I think it makes lefty pitchers go up. I think a guy that is a power lefty becomes more valuable, especially at a place like Yankee Stadium. I think it's worth talking about. Mm. I think it's good. I think that the baseball market fascinates me because it sort of leads the way to where all of sports are eventually going. It's crazy money. And I heard someone talking about some of the NIL stuff. You know, I was just looking into a few things, and I don't even think we're talking about this today, but did you realize that 6 of the last 8 finalists for the Heisman Trophy are guys that have gone to 2 schools or more? Like the Oregon quarterback, I believe, where did he start? Central Florida, then he went to Oklahoma, and now he's at Oregon. And somewhere in there, he committed to UCLA. But, I mean, he's now making, I believe, $1.6 million NIL while quarterbacking Oregon. And, you know, he's not going to win the Heisman. We know that Travis Hunter is the odds-on favorite to win the Heisman. And we know that he transferred, too, to be with Deion. So I think when you think about Caleb Williams winning the Heisman Trophy, then Jaden Daniels wins the Heisman Trophy, and now Travis Hunter is likely to win the Heisman Trophy, that would be 3 straight years of transfer quarterbacks, of transfer players winning the Heisman Trophy. Isn't that the new reality of college football? Not that we didn't know that.
For sure.
But did you realize, Dustin, that 6 of 8 of the finalists, 3 of the 4 last year and 3 of the 4 this year, and if you were voting, would you lean toward a guy like the BYU running back who is the only one that wasn't a transfer?
It's a really interesting stat. It's just college football is not really college football anymore.
No, and that underscores it. That's what I'm saying. I think that's
professionals, yeah.
Yeah.
The only thing that I would push, the only reason that maybe there's still some hope to it, and some people would think that's a terrible reason why, but the fact that it started with Michigan, Ohio State, and it carried on the rest of that weekend, that during those rivalry games, we saw a ton of emotion that I just didn't think existed anymore.
Right.
Right. I just didn't think it existed.
The best rivalry in sports.
I don't like either school, but it is really good. And that game was like absolutely awful to watch until the fourth quarter.
It was just horrible.
One of the most boring game.
Games. Hold on. After the Bears game, I'm a Michigan alum for listeners who don't know. After the Bears game on Thursday, I was watching the first half of this Michigan game, and I was texting my friends. I'm like, I don't think I even like football anymore. Like, what is fun about this? Like, everyone is just, I am miserable watching football these days. And then we won, and I felt better, and now I love football again.
The state of Ohio legislators, did you see this one? They are trying to pass a bill to make it illegal to plant a flag at the horseshoe.
Soft.
Is that unbelievable? They're going to make a law that would prevent Michigan from even attempting to go out there and put their flag in the ground.
Wasn't there like a rule during the week of that game that you don't like use words with the word M in it or something crazy like that?
Oh, yeah, they cross out M all over campus.
Yeah, like
anything.
The word M, the letter M that week is just no good.
So I'd be Ully for a week?
You'd be Ully.
But you're right, Dustin. Like, there just aren't a lot of, there's not that sort of rivalry and emotion anymore. Like, you don't see that where people are crossing out the M and.
Is that, like, I don't like that it went that route, but I did have, in a part of me, love the fact to see that emotion in college sports that I felt like in my 20s and 30s, I was all about that kind of stuff. And it's even been taken away from me as I've gotten older. But it brought me back. It made me feel young and hopeful for college sports that the athletes cared enough to get after it like they did.
Are you talking about the fight at the end?
Yes.
Where they had a,
yes.
They had
by the
a,
way.
Yes. I'm saying you saw it. South Carolina, North Carolina had it. Florida, Florida State had it. I'm saying it was nice to see that go on. I mean, you don't want it to be that to have the emotion. But if
you're
that's
not
what,
calling for violence,
no.
But you do like the emotion.
I like the emotion. I like to see that the rivalries are alive and well.
Texas, when Texas beat us at home, they planted their flag and we walked off the field because we lost. Like, get over it.
Oh, wow. So. They didn't do it at Michigan, though.
Yeah.
They, at the
Texas
big house, they
at UT planted their flag after the game.
Wow.
And Michigan, the Michigan players said, we probably deserve that.
Always,
that's how you lose. It's called sportsmanship.
Where did Baker Mayfield try to plant the flag?
It was
AstroTurf. You remember that? He had the flag, and he was trying to plant it, only there wasn't ground.
Well, same thing with Michigan and Ohio State, right?
I know.
But it's just the idea, right?
It's just, yeah.
Ceremonially.
Yeah, I get it. All right, there's so much to get to. We got the pick six next. We're going to pick apart all the stories of the day. Mully and Haw, we got Ruthie Belinsky in again today. Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
The Bears will return to practice on Thursday, starting that real prep for the Monday Nighter at the Vikings. Will you be actively tuning out reports about vibe around the team this week? Are you done with all the storylines regarding the happiness of players, excitement in the locker room, or crispiness of workouts? Crispness of workouts. Are any of those elements relevant after the performance in San Francisco this past Sunday?
Yeah, okay. I got to be honest with you. The preparations for the Monday Nighter, the happiness vibe, the whole... I am so not interested in whether or not they feel energy. I don't want to hear anything about a coach's bump again, ever. I don't want to know what the temperature of the team is. I find it irrelevant with this team. And I did feel, as I said last week, I was getting suckered. I was being told a story and to buy into a story about improvement based on what exactly? It was I thought the performance, the first half of that game, and the entire game for the defense was almost shameful. It was almost like I didn't see the emotion that you talked about with the college kids. I didn't see any kind of, and I'm not, I don't want to say the players don't want to win or they're not competing, but I didn't see any extra. I didn't see any benefit from everything that had happened. And quite the opposite. I felt like they were outcoached, outplayed, and they were just not as good as that organization at pretty much every position on the field. And I think when you see that happen, I'm not sure we felt that way about this team going into the season. I'm not sure we felt that way even when we were watching them in some games that they lost. But that was genuinely outclassed all the way around. There's no other way to feel about it, so I no longer care if they're happy.
Yeah, their happiness is not necessarily at the top of the list. They obviously, the players and the team, is not concerned with our happiness as the fans. They don't, with that effort, it's like a little kid where you're going to sit at the table or you're not going to have lunch. You know, you got to eat your lunch first and then you can have a piece of chocolate. And then you end up giving them the piece of chocolate because you don't want to listen to them moan and groan. So they didn't want Matt Eberflus around anymore. They played like they didn't want him around anymore. So the team did something they've never done in the history of the charter franchise of the sport, got rid of the coach midseason, something that I believe the McCaskies did not want to do, which is why it lasted until it lasted on Friday, Black Friday for Matt Eberflus after Thanksgiving, right? There was no reason that it didn't happen on Thanksgiving night or at the crack of dawn. On Friday, Matt Eberflus should have never been back out there talking to the media and talking to the fans through the media. Should have never happened ever, ever, ever. And we can say, well, who was it? Was it Kevin Warren? I know it wasn't Ryan Poles. That I bet any money Ryan Poles at that point had no hesitation to get rid of his friend, air quotes, Matt Eberflus. But yeah, I'm done with it too. I don't want to hear about that. But listen, the head coach on his introductory press conference admitted, unless he misspoke, he admitted that there was an issue in the locker room.
Oh, yeah. No, he said they had to get the team together. That was the number one thing.
Right, they had to get it. So he also got the media to ask players what was going on and who's not happy with who. Is the defensive line not happy with the secondary? Or is this an offense versus defense? Is this a young versus old? Is this, it's all about Caleb Williams, and I'm sick of hearing about that. The wide receivers, maybe. There was an issue between our guy DJ Moore and Caleb Williams. They admitted there was something going on, that they have not been holding hands the whole way through this thing. So, but yes, I'm tired of it. I am tired of it. It shouldn't be the storyline.
I think the whole narrative of the everything's better now, the locker room is more happy. Like, I just thought that got so blown out of proportion. Did I think that there would still be potentially a bump and a boost from new leadership? I did. But I just think the whole that we're happy now, look at us dancing at practice. Like, they were dancing all year. Like, yeah. I cover them at training camp. Cover them a few weeks, early on in the season. This team has always liked, they enjoy football. They have a great job, right? Like, they love what they do. I never felt like there was no one's moping, no one's unhappy. I am done hearing about this everything's better now sort of situation. Like, that's just, and I think, as Dustin sort of alluded to, they asked for that attention by saying, we got to bring everyone together. It was Eric Washington that you guys were saying, everyone's smiling. Like, congratulations. Like, I don't know. I you guys have lost a lot of games. Like, should anyone be smiling? I don't care who the coach is. So I'm definitely done hearing about the storylines. I don't know if anything is going to really, other than playing better, is going to get you a win on a game, whether you're happy or not. So, good luck.
Terrific question. Need to get that answered. Don't have it for you today.
Bruce Levine will take the questions at 8 o'clock from you guys. He's down live at the winter meetings down in Dallas. Let's talk about the Bears' vaunted culture. Can you think of a good example of it during the 7-game losing streak? Is it a myth? You hope they hire a coach with NFL experience to improve or build on these areas, the team, or are they content to promote a hot coordinator as the Bears have so often done?
That's as me first. All right. I think an example of this culture, if I'm understanding, interpreting the question correctly, I want to say during this losing streak, other than the New England and the Arizona game, they were fighting till the bitter end, the players. And that to me is a sign of a good culture. No one, other than those two games, which I think could be Arizona, maybe a hangover from the Hail Mary, and New England, just God only knows. But I think an example of sort of the way that this football team is built and the personalities that they've sort of gathered together to form this roster, these guys are fighters. I think they want to win. I think they want to work hard. And I think they want to do things that lead to winning, to the point of maybe we don't necessarily believe in our coaching staff putting us in the best situation at the end of the game, but we're going to do everything we can to at least get there. So I think that's an example of the culture. Now you got to figure out how to win, right? That's the next step in the culture. Do I hope they hire a coach with experience? Absolutely. I think it is important, and everyone's making a big deal of this leader of men phrase that just drives me absolutely up the wall, because guess what? There are women in the organization too, just for the record. You're leading an organization, not just the NFL players. Oh, also, there's a woman on your coaching staff. So, leader of men, I think, is someone, to me, that they are looking for someone with experience who has done this before, who can command a room, who knows how to formulate a winning coaching staff, knows how to win. I think that's a huge part of this too. And, you know, we were talking about two examples of that. And, you know, I think Mike Vrabel is another great example. Brian Flores, back-to-back winning seasons in New England, comes from the, or I'm sorry, in Miami, comes from New England, where did a lot of winning there too. So I think there is a lot of, it would be hard to criticize a hire of a coach who has previous coaching winning experience.
I'm going to have the 708 texter help me out here. He responded to the show. Maybe next year we don't need eight captains.
Mm-hmm.
We joked about this going back when this happened.
You never need eight captains.
You never. When you have eight, you have none, right? This is one of those, the old too many Chiefs, not enough Indians, right? You know, this is it's silly. And, you know, this now goes
Rosie
all the
said
way
it
to the
yesterday.
Top.
Yesterday, you know, you got two quarterbacks, you don't have one.
Right.
You got eight captains. Who's the leader?
But Ryan Poles sold the fans and the media on how much better the culture was in the building. I think what we got to consume off of Hard Knocks was trying to show us about all this kumbaya type stuff from the taco truck at Matt Eberflus's extravagant party with the infinity pool heading over the lake. You know, it was all, we get along, we have fun, everybody's pulling in the same direction. We were sold this fake bill of goods. I'm right now today, and the big question is, who's your offensive coordinator? You know, if today, Dustin, who should be the next head coach of the Bears? I'd go Mike Vrabel, from the fact that he has had head coaching experience, and I think guys learn from that. I mean, you know, they always say you get these jobs to be fired, and how do guys respond the second time? What did they, you know, I don't want to be fired again, so what am I going to do to not get fired again? And I like the New England Patriot Bill Belichick stink on him, but the first question is, who's going to be your offensive coordinator, Mike Vrabel?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the old adage would be Belichick needed Cleveland before he became the great coach that he eventually was with the New England Patriots. I would say that the Bears have sold this culture stuff like crazy. I'm not saying it's completely non-existent. I think they have tried very hard to develop a culture. I think, however, that when you sell culture, great culture, as a reason that you had to force out the defensive coordinator last year and you had to fire the running backs coach, look how good our culture is. That's not what it means, guys. You know, you have a good enough culture where that stuff doesn't take place and you don't have to do that. That's what it means. And I think that, you know, I don't like the idea of players confronting the coach in the post game. I don't like the idea of it. I think it's, you know, maybe I'm old school, but every team I've ever been on, you have to acknowledge that somebody is above you and has a better role than you, and you can't do that, guys. You just can't do it, whether he had it coming or not. I thought that the whole Tyreek Stevenson thing, that's how this whole losing streak started. That's bad culture, man. That is selfish. That is not buying into the program. That's not doing what you are required to do in order to keep your job. And his reaction to that and everything that happened afterward, listen, people make mistakes. You know, I thought Olin pointing out that for Tevin Jenkins to sort of be yeah, well, I love Flusie, but yeah. I mean, everybody feels like he had to go, or whatever way he was just, you know, the ladder, which was, did he have to go? And when you're the guy that makes a big penalty at the end of the game that puts you in a hole, and then the quarterback gets sacked, and the clock is ticking. I mean, listen, I watched it. I know how bad it was. And I you know, even if you're fighting and coming back, the fact that you can't finish it isn't an example of great culture. It is, I felt that other people also made mistakes, but the accountability factor is why you fire the coach.
Well, that's a great point, because not once did I hear over the course of last week after Matt Eberflus gets fired, not really did I ever hear anyone say, this sucks. Like, we never want our coach to get fired. We didn't do enough as players. I didn't hear that from anyone last week.
Accountability. I thought that Caleb Williams at one point said something. Said something like, "There's a human element to it," but that was like the only guy that even acknowledged this guy. Like, I think Matt Eberflus stays in the NFL and he'll be a defensive coordinator and he'll be a good one. But I don't think he gets another bite at the apple. I don't think another franchise is giving him a head coaching job. That's a tough end to his career if he's never a head coach again. That's just a tough way to have it end. And I don't think anybody felt even our listeners, no one felt, everyone was kind of like, well, he had to go. Like, what happened? He had to go. And I get it. I understand what happened, and I know about accountability. I'm just saying, like, wow, that guy, you know, hopes, dreams. He reached the top of the mountain. I know he's getting paid to leave. You don't have to text me that he's getting paid. I understand the situation. I'm just saying, you know, imagine if you really aspire to that and you devoted your life to it and you reached the height of your profession and then you were unceremoniously kicked out the door, whether you're responsible for it or not. It's a harsh reality.
Not to mention all the assistants, low-level assistants on that coaching staff that now have to move their families. Yes. Like, there's a lot of situations that happen when a head coach gets fired, and for the players, just kind of be like, "Yeah, we're excited about the change." Like, accountability.
That was. It's harsh. It's just tough. And I don't know that there's a single guy, and we've talked about this, that doesn't need to look in the mirror and say, "Have I done everything possible?" Because we know for a fact that they haven't.
I mean, is that really a question?
Were you in any way amused to see the confusion among some baseball fans that the White Sox weren't in the MLB's draft lottery after becoming the worst team in baseball's history? History. Is there any upside in picking 10th in this draft?
Okay, I'm exposing myself on this one because, like, I didn't even know that this was good. Like, until I saw the pick six questions, I was like, what? Like, I didn't know this was happening.
They changed the rules. What do they call it? The competitive balance rule or something? Because teams are losing on purpose.
Right.
They're not going to let you have a top pick 2 years running.
Right.
But the way it worked out with all the lottery stuff, the Sox would have picked sixth. I saw Jim Margulis texted that. Like, if they were in that lottery and they had, like, all the odds for the number one pick, they would have been sixth.
I mean, it's just, yeah, it is funny because it's just so emblematic of White Sox, right? Like, just nothing really going your way, right? So I think that's why it was amusing. Is there an upside to picking 10th in the draft? Well, I guess they could pick high next year, right?
That's the upside. They could have number one next year.
So there you go.
When they lose 100 games.
Right.
That's the upside. Right. So you didn't get it. They're probably going to lose 100 games next year, right? Yeah. They're not going to be as bad, but probably 100.
They'll get 20 games better and lose 100.
Right? And lose 100. So, okay. You know, is it amusing? You know, sure. It
was amusing, the confusion.
They're trying to let teams not tank. That's the purpose of this whole thing.
Here's the good news. You ready? This is the good news. The good news is that in rounds 2 through 20, they will have the number one pick in that round. So in each round after the first round, they pick 10th in the first round.
Right.
But if they do their job well, they will get first bite at the apple in every other round. But no, it does stink that they really get, I mean, you get the 10th pick after that season. The Bears could get the 10th pick in next year's draft, and they didn't set a record for historical losses. I mean, they had a lot of bad ones, and they certainly offended us and ruined our lives having to watch it. But I was kind of amused because they have put in this rule, and you're absolutely right, Dustin. They don't want everyone taking. And the very fact that they can get the number one pick next year kind of is nice because I don't think they're really going to be that much better, but we'll be getting into it.
Ask me the hard-hitting questions.
Did Time Magazine get it right by picking Caitlin Clark as its Athlete of the Year? Should a rookie get such an honor without winning a title? Did the fact that she acknowledged her, quote, white privilege and say that, quote, more we can elevate black women, that's going to be a beautiful thing, end quote, buy her any goodwill among fellow players?
Oh, this. I think this is you, Molly.
I was that last.
You want me to go? Okay. It's okay. Oh, sorry. Okay, this is me. They definitely got it right by naming her Athlete of the Year. She drew so much attention to women's basketball, college and professional, because of what she did and the records she broke and the way that she handled it all. I think she drew an entire... You saw all the records, the TV records, breaking all the records, right? With the attention that women's basketball was getting last year. I think acknowledging... You know, I'm sort of battling with this a little bit because it does feel like Caitlin Clark has had to answer for a lot of racial and sort of political, social, like, causes that she's just playing basketball and doing it really, really well. So it's unfortunate that she's having to sort of take on all of that responsibility as well. However, with the spotlight comes, you know, that's what it is. And I think acknowledging that there is a disparity and maybe disconnect between the white women's basketball players and the women's basketball players of color, I think that's something to acknowledge and to elevate. And I think she is acknowledging that she's aware of it. And so I think it's hard to sort of criticize her in that situation for saying those things. And it does, from what I've gathered, I'm not a woman of color, but or a professional basketball player, but it does look like that's being received well, that she said that. So if that's going to unify, dare I use the word unify this week, but if that's going to unify these women's basketball players and athletes that are dealing with sort of this difficult, polarizing situation, then so be it. But I think she deserves the recognition. I think she has completely transformed not just women's basketball, but women's sports and the attention that it's on. It was really unfortunate. Molly and I were talking about this. It's unfortunate that she wasn't on the Olympic team because of the eyeballs.
It's insane.
So, listen, she changed the way that people perceive women's sports, and she deserves a lot of credit for that.
What you just said to end your answer is the reason why she did so much to change the way women's sports are perceived. Mm-hmm. That's why she should win the... This is not about championships. This is not about being white. It's not about being black. I remember, as an example, last winter, we did a special... I thought it was a great idea and a great show. We did a special pregame Super Bowl show. All the hosts, the score were together at a bar, restaurant. Before the Super Bowl, there's obviously sporting events that day. Caitlin Clark was going, trying to be the all-time leading scorer, I think, in the Big Ten at that point. Not ever, but in the Big Ten. Like, every TV in this sports bar had that game on. They had a huge graphic in the corner as she made baskets, counting it down. I was staring at the TV. People were making prop bets on, you know, her over under in points, her over under in attempted or made three pointer. Yes. Now, I would love to know, and I can't find it. Like, who's the runner up?
Oh, for the athlete.
Like,
of the year.
You know, like, yeah. So, right. Like, is there a debate? Who's it doesn't? I don't see anything out there. They don't let you know who were the top five vote getters. I mean. Now, is she the best athlete on the planet? I don't think that's what it's about. I think she brought an unbelievable positive attention to. You see the lines wrapped around the buildings? Every arena was sold out. Taylor Swift wants to go see her play basketball. Yes, she is the Time Athlete of the Year. And congratulations to her.
First of all, I think this is a tremendous story. I think that It's a really fitting and appropriate gift to give her. First of all, she played in a championship last year, didn't she? Wasn't she in the national championship in college? And the next thing you know, she's in the WNBA. That is crazy to me how quickly the two seasons follow each other. I mean, they really might want to rethink that at some point, because it felt like she and all of the rookies were totally getting burnt out by the time you got to the Olympic break, and they probably needed that, probably was good for them but she should have been on that team. Listen, what Caitlin Clark accomplished last year was pretty extraordinary because she brought a sport into the national lens. People that didn't watch women's basketball were watching it because Caitlin Clark was playing. They were watching her play, and her numbers and the amount of viewers that she brought in was extraordinary. But they also were watching games when she wasn't playing. She brought an interest, and she was like Steph Curry in the way that she changed the game in terms of not just the way that she could hit a three-pointer, but she brought popularity to women's basketball. It really, she sold that sport, man. And people followed her from her college career into her WNBA career. And I'm sure there was a lot of pettiness and jealousy over the fact that it was relatively easy for her and she got more attention than anyone else. But a high tide lifts all ships. I mean, she did a lot for that game. And I think it's great what she had to say about that. I think that, you know, we all stand on the shoulders of giants. You're not the first one to do what you do. You're part of a lineage of people that you are leaning upon for the businesses that you work in when you're in the, let's call it, the entertainment industry. So I don't think she's had a misstep. I think it's really hard to be in the public eye as much as she is, and she hasn't had a misstep.
Yeah.
And that's, Taylor told her. Taylor Swift said that after the Eras Tour is over, she and Trev want to come to one of her games in Indiana, and she invited her to a Chiefs game. I mean, you know, if you're going to be hanging out with Tay-Tay, you've hit a new level.
Peak.
That's another really good question.
Where are you with Chris Getz saying it's not a stretch to have Colson Montgomery as the White Sox starting shortstop, depending how the team's top prospect does in the spring? And catcher Edgar Cuero is expected to contend for the spot on a big league roster, the White Sox big league roster. Your thoughts on that?
Well, they're not going to go out and get a team, is what they're telling you. They're going to promote their guys from within. And you know, I'm all for Colson Montgomery. I hope he kind of salvaged what was a bad year for him in the minors last year with his great performance in the Arizona Fall League. And I know he's said that he wants to stick at shortstop. I think long-term he might be a third baseman. I would be open to that, even if he isn't. Edgar Cuero is going to be the bigger of the two in terms of his star. He's going to be an unbelievable player. They already have said they're going to get another catcher, and they have one. But, I think that they're going with some of the younger guys. I just wish they had more of them.
Well, if you're not going to play Colson Montgomery this year at that position, then when in the world would you do it? If not, now when?
Love it. Mic drop. I think, is that it? I really think, I mean, I wasn't surprised to see this. I think this is what it's going to be. It's going to be give the guys a shot to figure it out, and hopefully they're managed more appropriately. You got Talkman to lead the way. Big Mike. So I think it's cool. Colson Montgomery, and I'm not going to pretend to say that I've studied him, but he seems like a very exciting player just to watch, Molly, if I'm, you know, correct. So I think it's going to be really interesting. It's going to be sort of a, let's see what these guys can do, get them the experience and the bigs, and build around them.
The last question will be.
That's the voice of Stacey Dale. She's here at 9. How do you feel about Patrick Williams participating fully in the Bulls' non-contact practice yesterday, as expected to play in contact full scrimmage practice today? He's been out since November the 18th.
So it's been just under a month. I hope that Patrick Williams can continue to sort of progress and find some consistency in the way that he was playing before he got hurt. But I feel like we've been saying that for a really long time. So I hope he can stay healthy. I hope that he continues his upward trajectory of sort of this aggressive nature that we've seen sparks of. Now you just have to stay healthy and do it consistently. And I am going to cautiously get excited about it, but that's very even keeled.
Very, Dustin, not a fan of Patrick.
Whip the frickin' do. If he takes 1 minute of minute away from Matas Buzelis when he returns, then, you know, eh. Programming note, Billy Donovan, 8:25, Mully, with you tomorrow. And ooh, just because I'm being me, ooh is not a basketball move.
Yeah, and no one beyond whatever grammar school team you coached ever has done that. My
Knights
God.
Basketball. Ooh, is not a basketball move. And that's what Patrick Williams does. He stands in the corner, tries to shoot
He's
a three.
He's never
ooh.
Made that noise. He's never done that. You are, Dustin has, there was some like friend of his daughter's peeved him off as a coach, whatever, 5 years ago, and now he's projected it all on Patrick Williams. That's my belief.
Wrong.
Patrick Williams, they need him. It's good to get him back. Yeah. They need all hands on deck. I'm happy that he's finally feeling better. I'm happy he returned to the non-contact practice, and I'm glad that he'll be taking a part in some scrimmage stuff today, and he'll be going full contact. I think that they need all of their players. They're paying him. They want to see what he can do. I do agree with Dustin that there can be. Do not interrupt the momentum that you're building with Matas Buzelis.
Yeah.
And whatever way you need to play him, that is the priority, because I think he has the more promising future, and you want to get to that as quickly as possible. But I have no problem with Patrick Williams coming back. All players welcome on the Chicago Bulls. All right, we've got the extra point. We're going to get right to that. And you're so right about Colson Montgomery. He is the greatest Indiana schoolboy legend athlete since our own very own beloved David Hall.
Wow.
That's what
high praise.
Say. That's what they say. All right, extra point next. Mullion Hall on the score.
He's an Indiana boy.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mullion Hall on 670 The Score.
Bears Iron Man Patrick Manley asked a good question on The Score yesterday regarding the Bears.
From top down, Kevin Warren included, who was doing well at their job? Kevin was brought here to deal with the stadium, right? Is that going well? It doesn't seem like it. I don't know Chicago politics, the money and all that kind of stuff, but it doesn't seem like anybody from the top all the way down is doing well.
So, who's doing a good job at Halas Hall?
I think I'm going to get chastised for this, and I don't want anyone, I can't see the text line, so don't text at me. But I think Ryan Poles is doing a good job. I think he got the quarterback. He lucked into a lot of it. He's made some mistakes. He's owned up to those mistakes in terms of personnel and coaching decisions and hiring decisions. And I am intrigued to see how he corrects the head coach decision. I think he's doing a good job. And I think he's, as Kevin Warren reminded us, he's young. He's a young GM. He's going to make mistakes. He's going to learn. And I'm excited to see how he continues to grow. The Kevin Warren comment about the stadium, I think, is fascinating, because if Kevin Warren is going to have a major part in this head coaching search, which we've all kind of alluded, been led to believe, that's a full-time job. You can't, you know, put half effort into this coaching search. That's a full-time job. So then who's doing the stadium? Because it's not why you came here. So I'm just curious to see how that kind of plays out.
I'd give Ryan Poles an all right. I give him an all right on it. I just, you know, the hardest one is it's going to be really hard to make this roster comment, kind of like we're going to take the North and never give it back. Mm-hmm. You know, these are standalone items that don't look very good right now. Okay. But I had a problem with this when they brought the guy in. You know, as soon as Kevin Warren got involved in making football decisions that don't necessarily have an impact on the stadium. This one might, though, if you think about it. We don't have a lot of time in this segment. I just don't want Kevin Warren making too many football decisions.
That's fair. Torrey Taylor's doing all right. I know that's a terrible thing to say, but as a man that demanded they draft a punter, and as a man that celebrated and felt as if I had won a championship myself when they drafted the punter from Iowa, who was like one of my favorite players
Same
in that draft.
Ever.
I was delighted, and I am delighted, and I think he might be having the best season out of any player on the team, which, again, you know, it's interesting to have Patrick Manley be the guy to point this question out, because many years, Pat was the best player on the team. The problem was, as I wrote one time, and he jokes with me about, you can't ride the long snapper to a Super Bowl. But he was the best long snapper in the league for many years, and was a guy that was having these, like, perfect seasons that no one was picking up on. Just
who drafted Who drafted Torrey Taylor?
That would be Ryan Poles.
Thank you very much.
You're making your point. Yeah, I'm with you. All right, we got to get to Joe Ostrowski. We'll talk to Joe next. Get your wagertainments for the weekend. It's Mully and Haw, and we have Ruthie Polinsky in again this morning on Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of the Score.
Money, 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 money.
Mully and Haw, Ruthie Polinsky in this morning, and we've got Joe Ostrowski now joining us on the Score hotline, the Aturo hotline, your all-weather tire, aturo.com. Joseph, good morning. How are you, buddy?
Hi, Joe.
Good morning, Mully and Ruthie. Just Bears making me look stupid. All of us look stupid. Themselves look stupid. Week after week, silly me. I will only talk about the fired coach bump with other teams. That's something that I always forget. Like the rules are different with this team. We all know that.
Well, I mean, are they going to win another game? Will you find yourself wagering upon them again, Joe, or will you instead choose to, I don't know, make a wager that they lose out?
I don't know that anybody's going to be able to say on Monday, I'm betting on the Bears, which probably means that you should bet on the Bears because they show up when you least expect them to, and they're a complete no-show when you expect them to actually fight. But I was curious about this because I know you guys have been talking a lot about this, and with the tough schedule that they, of course, have, we've been looking at Seattle. Like, that's the one game that a lot of people look at. So I was curious what the win total is sitting here 4-9. They have the updated win total at 5.5 juice to the under. So the betting market is basically saying, all right, we think the Bears will win one more game. It's just good luck figuring out what that game is, because that game that was circled that most people figured, okay, Seattle would be the game. Don't look now, but since they're bye, they've won 4 straight games. Mike McDonald making changes on defense. He's figured things out. Over the last month, they're only giving up 15 points per game. So, yeah, I would agree with you guys right now that probably not, even though the number's 5.5 for wins.
They could maybe get the Lions at home after they played them close. Lions start resting people. I don't know.
Yeah, that number's 7.5 for next week, Ruthie.
Okay, well, talk to us about the one that's coming up Monday night. Bears-Vikings, what are the props looking like?
Yeah, you guys hit on it. The Vikings are so much more interesting to talk about. Kevin O'Connell, you know, he's the second favorite now for the coach of the year, and of course Flores. But I look to the guys that got him in the last matchup, and it's where the Bears have struggled mightily on defense with or without Eberflus, stopping that run game. Aaron Jones was over 100 yards last time against them. His early number is 61.5. 61.5. You'd assume he'd continue to run. Oh, I think we've seen him have a couple good games against the Bears in the past. And then the tight end position, Hockenson, he went for over 100, and we saw what Kittle's done and a number of tight ends this season. That number is only 39.5 receiving yards. So as far as how I'm going to attack it, I'll be looking at Aaron Jones and Hockenson.
All right. Why are people betting Notre Dame to win the national championship? Is that insane?
If you look at the path, I don't think it's insane. It is a year where there isn't one great team that stands above the rest. And if you look at the odds, the favorites to win the titles of the top four, three are on the top half of the bracket: Oregon, Texas, and Ohio State, even though they're the eight. And we get word about Carson Beck. It doesn't look like he'd be ready for that second round game. If Notre Dame were to beat Indiana like they're supposed to, and it ends up being this guy Stockton, talking to some people that make numbers on this, they say if it's not Beck, that they would make Notre Dame a favorite against Georgia, a short favorite. And then, okay, let's say you get past there. Let's say you meet up with Penn State. It's James Franklin. He's 1-17 against top five teams. Notre Dame fans can talk themselves into this. So people have been betting them this week at 10-1.
Something to have public teams, Joe. Thank you, buddy. Great stuff as always.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, I don't know about that, though. Marcus Freeman bump? I'm not sold. I think he's done a good job this year, but I'm not sold. All right.
TBD.
We've got a lot to get to. We'll get to it next. It's Mully and Haw. It's Ruthie Polinsky on the score.